Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
Today on Wings.
I was a token woman poet for many years. White patriarchy doesn't want more than a certain few women poets to exist. You know, if you put together an anthology, if you're editing a book or whatever on the state of poetry today, those are the ones you allude to. You know, they're the two dead ladies, and then there's me.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. A much-loved literary heroine and thinker of the women's movement died March 27, 2012. Adrienne Rich was born May 16, 1929. In 1951, she graduated from Radcliffe College, the women's undergraduate program of Harvard, and that's also the year her poetry book, A Change of World, was selected by W.H. Auden for the Yale Younger Poets Prize.
I felt at college very alienated from the Harvard literary scene. I was a woman. But I was told by a teacher, I think one of my writing teachers, that there was this prize and that I probably had enough poems to make a manuscript, and why didn't I just try for it? And I put together the manuscript, not really believing that anything was going to happen. And then in the middle of the summer got a letter in, I will always remember, written in turquoise ink from W.H. Auden, saying that this book had been selected, and I was totally shaken. I didn't know how to deal with it. You have to remember that this was 1950, and being a woman, according to the expectations of the 1950s, that seemed in total conflict. So it was a very overwhelming thing, and fundamentally what I think I did was to flee from it in various ways, and one of the ways was getting married and having three children. Very fast. I mean, that wasn't the only thing that the marriage was about or that having the children was about, but it was part of it.
What do you think has changed the most in your understanding of yourself as a poet from that time to this?
Well, I started out as a very technically accomplished formalist poet, and I thought of my poems in that period very much as these beautiful, hopefully beautiful boxes which I was building, and which, you know, when the box snapped shut, it was finished, perfect, and you moved on to the next box.
Like a jewel.
And whatever was in those boxes was to stay inside.
And not get messy and into your life.
Not get messy and into my life, and all kinds of things in my life were not supposed to be visible in the poems. As I went along and into the 50s, into marriage, motherhood, and many other things, I increasingly couldn't write that kind of poem anymore. And increasingly found myself writing what, you know, is sometimes called free verse, sometimes organic form, but at all events needing a much more open-ended kind of structure within which to begin to try to probe some of the things I was living through. And it was very indirect at first and still very defended, but I think that the whole process for me has been gradually shedding all kinds of defenses.
That was Adrienne Rich in 1983, interviewed by Eloise Klein Healy for Pacifica Radio. Starting with the book Snapshots of a Daughter-in-Law, published in 1963, Rich began a process of becoming more political and more self-revealing in her work. Divisions of Labor was written in 1988.
This is called Divisions of Labor. The revolutions wheel, compromise, utter their statements. A new magazine appears, mastheaded with old names. An old magazine polishes up its act with deconstructions of the prose of Malcolm X. The women in the back rows of politics are still licking thread to slip into the needle's eye, trading bones for plastic, splitting pods for necklaces to sell to the cruise ships, producing immaculate First Communion dresses with flat iron and irresolute hot water, still fitting the microscopic golden wires into the silicon chips, still teaching, watching the children quenched in the crossfire alleys, the flash flood gullies, the kerosene flash fires, the women whose labor remakes the world each and every morning. I have seen a woman sitting between the stove and the stars, her fingers singed from snuffing out the candles of pure theory, finger and thumb both scorched. I have felt that sacred wax blister my hand.
In 1976, after her husband had died and her sons were grown, Adrienne Rich embarked on a lifelong lesbian relationship with another poet, Michelle Cliff. This is Edgelit from the book Dark Fields of the Republic, published in 1996.
Edgelit, living under fire in the rain-colored opal of your love, I could have forgotten other women I desired so much I wanted to love them, but here are some reasons love would not let me. One had a trick of dropping her lashes along her cheekbone in an amazing screen so she saw nothing. Another would stand in summer, arms rounded and warm, catching wild apricots that fell either side of a broken fence, but she caught them on one side only. One, ambitious, flushed to the collarbone, a shapely coward. One, keen as mica, glittering, full at the lips, absent at the core. One who flirted with danger, had her escape route planned when others had none, and disappeared. One sleepwalking on the trestle of privilege, dreaming of innocence, tossing her cigarette into the dry gully, an innocent gesture.
Rich's first overtly lesbian poetry appears in the 1978 collection The Dream of a Common Language. Also in the late 1970s, Rich began publishing nonfiction prose. Two books that became feminist classics are Of Woman Born, Motherhood as Experience and Institution, 1976, and On Lies, Secrets, and Silence, 1979. In 1980, she wrote the essay Compulsory Heterosexuality and Lesbian Existence. Rich spoke with Eloise Klein Healy about being out as a lesbian.
I don't know that everyone has this experience, and I think a lot depends on the age at which you acknowledge yourself as a lesbian, that you acknowledge that you are in love with a woman madly, physically, passionately, erotically. And I was in my 40s, and I felt elated. I mean, for a long time I had thought that I couldn't possibly be a lesbian. I had been married, I had had these children, you know, all the things
all
that
the
people
rules.
Say. And but women were the only people who interested me. They alone stirred my imagination, as Virginia Woolf said. And I guess for me it felt initially like this incredible gift, and I wasn't facing at that point the kind of situation that a lot of my friends have faced with, say, a child and a custody case and a jealous husband. I wasn't faced with having to make some kind of immediate sacrifice. And it was fueling my work incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yet, over and over and over again, I found myself feeling that I have to come out to people, and I'm particularly in public situations, because there are so many who don't want me to be this, who don't want it to be true of me, because when I came out, I already had a certain reputation.
You certainly
did. I was
a
sort of establishment poet,
right,
and well-credentialed by the boys and mm-hmm. all of that. So that, I mean, I constantly feel I'm having to make this point, which is annoying and maddening, but I will make it as long as they want us to step back in the closet.
On Wings, you're listening to a tribute to the poet Adrian Rich, who died March 27th, 2012. Rich was a tremendous champion of other writers, especially women writers and black writers. In 1974, when the National Book Award was split between herself and Allen Ginsberg, Rich invited the two black women feminists who had also been nominated, Alice Walker and Audre Lorde, to accept with her on behalf of all women. Here's a poem Rich wrote about her friendship with another black poet, June Jordan.
And this is dedicated to the late poet June Jordan. When we are shaken out, when we are shaken out to the last vestige, when history is done with us, when our late grains glitter, salt swept into shadow, indignant and importunate strife-fractured crystals, will it matter if our tenderness, our solidarity, abides in residue, long as there's tenderness and solidarity? Could the tempos and attunements of my voice, or in a poem, or yours and mine, in telephonic high hilarity, cresting above some stupefied inanity, be more than personal? And, as you once said, what's wrong with that?
Adrian Rich talked about her early apprehension of racism and prejudice in the 1983 Pacifica interview.
My father was a Jew. My father's mother was Jewish. And my mother is a Gentile and comes of that WASP stock. Southern, however, and all of my family, my kin, are in the Deep South, what's left of my family, with the exception of my mother and my sister. I grew up in an extremely segregated situation where we did not see black people who were not servants of the white middle class. I don't think it was until I was in high school that I was in a room with black students, and certainly only in college had any real contact with black people who were not working for somebody's family. There were also all of the kinds of silences that go on around genteel racism. I mean, I didn't know anything about lynching, for example, until I was much older. At the same time, the word Negro was always uttered in a kind of half whisper, as though it were itself too heavy, too weighty to be spoken in a normal voice. I think that any child growing up in this kind of situation knows that there is an enormous amount of tension among the adults, that there are strange things going on that are never alluded to and never explained. There are certain tones of voice that you, say, hear your mother adopt when speaking to a black person, and it makes you incredibly uncomfortable, but you don't know why. And then after a while, you learn to talk that way. I mean, I think that there are all kinds of things which could not have been identified at that time by me, and which I was very grateful to writers like Lillian Smith for identifying. I began reading James Baldwin in the early 50s with enormous relief and feeling that here was someone saying things that I needed to know, and it was so clarifying, and it was like suddenly there were names for these inchoate, awful feelings. And then the civil rights movement, moving into that, beginning to have a sense of the history of black people in this country and the history of racism in this country, beginning to have a sense that there was also a history of struggle, of resistance, that the things that we had been taught in school about happy slaves were a pack of lies, mm-hmm. Beginning also to suspect that a great deal else that I had been told about many things was a pack of lies, and feeling tremendously moved by the cadences of especially the prose writers, and finally beginning to get involved on a very minor level, partly through teaching, partly through writing. But I think that feminism was very decisive for me. I was saying to a friend today with whom I had lunch that although I was thinking about a lot of these things earlier, including things like Jewish identity and anti-Semitism, racism, war, that feminism was a kind of portal through which if I stepped, it seemed to me I would forever after have to be confronting these things. There was no way of dropping back into some safe place, because I feel feminism as a kind of accountability of women to women, for women, and as calling on us to be aware of the lives of women very unlike ourselves and of our own difference.
Adrienne Rich continued her activism, notably anti-war activism, into the early 2000s. In 1995, when she was 66 years old, she talked of writing about activism to interviewer Helene Rosenbluth at KPFA in Berkeley, California.
I wanted to write a poem which would in some way be expressive of the emotional subjectivity of political movements and political commitments. I wanted to try to write about, and this is partly because, you know, we've all seen the movements of the 60s, let's say, or, you know, any other movement, the women's movement or whatever, encapsulated and frozen and not only denigrated, but oversimplified, turned into some kind of formula. And I wanted to write poetry which would somehow have the, I could almost say the rhythms, the current, the flow of what it is like to be with others in a liberatory movement. And that's what this poem really came out of. It became a lot of other things as well. And I was trying for a much more almost collage-like style than I had attempted for a long time in poetry. I was letting myself go in a lot of directions. And I have to say that the work of a number of other women in particular was very helpful to me in finding ways of doing this. I'm thinking of the Irish poet Maeve McGuckian, who actually comes into the poem with a postcard, whose work really has fascinated me. And the late American poet Linda Hull, now I'm going to forget the title of her posthumous volume, which is really a wonderful book. I'm sorry that I'm forgetting that title, but it's a poetry of such energy, and it's a poetry that is really dealing with bleakness, harshness, and despair in a very exhilarating way. And a book that came out a couple of years ago by Donna Massini called That Kind of Danger. Work like this has been really important to me in sort of moving into a line and a tempo and a kind of energy that I needed for this particular poem. And so that's where Inscriptions comes from. And the poem Comrade, I don't know if you want me to read. Okay. It's the first poem in the sequence. Little as I knew you, I know you. Little as you knew me, you know me. That's the light we stand under when we meet. I've looked into flecked jaws, walked injured beaches foot slick in oil, watching licked birds stumble in flight, while you, drawn through the pupil of your eye, across your own oceans in visionary pain and in relief, headlong and by choice, took on the work of charting your city's wounds, ancient and fertile, listening for voices within and against. My testimony, yours, trying to keep faith, not with each other exactly, yet it's the one known and unknown who stands for, imagines the other with whom faith could be kept. In city, your mind burns, wanes, waxes with hope. No stranger to bleakness, you. Worms have toothed at your truths, but you were honest regarding that. You conspired to compile the illegal discography of songs forbidden to sing or to be heard. If there were ethical flowers, one would surely be yours, and I'd hand it to you headlong across landmines, across cities' whilest sleeplight. I'd hand it purposefully with love, a hand trying to keep beauty afloat on the bacterial waters. When a voice learns to sing, it can be heard as dangerous. When a voice learns to listen, it can be heard as desperate. The self unlocked to many selves, a mirror handed to one who just released from the locked ward, from solitary, from preventive detention, sees in her thicket of hair, her lost eyebrows, whole populations. One who discharged from war stares in the looking glass of home at what he finds there, sees in the undischarged tumult of his own eye how thick-skinned peace is and those who claim to promote it.
The poem Comrade, part of Inscriptions, part of a bigger book, Dark Fields of the Republic, by my guest Adrienne Rich. I just have one question in that particular poem, and that is when I'm reading it, I must say I picture women speaking to women, and then I was just taken aback a little bit by the pronoun he towards the end of the poem. I wondered what that represented for you.
Well, I didn't mean this poem to be only about women speaking to women. I think that for me at this point, there are poems in which I'm certainly speaking to women, and they're in this book. And yet I think that we all speak knowing that we're overheard to whomever we're speaking, if we're speaking in print, if we're making art and putting it out there. We hope to be overheard. We hope not only to be heard by the person who is addressed, or even the people who are addressed. And I think of this poem as very, and this whole book, certainly, as was an Atlas of the Difficult World, as very much a book for and addressed to those who can use it, those who want it.
So it's interesting now that to be inclusionary, poets like Adrienne Rich will use the word he, because in so many other, and not that you haven't in other poems, when we talk about inclusionary words, whether it be in liturgy or whether it be in poems that we can identify with, we so often are looking to male poets and male writers to include women. And it's interesting to see that in your poems, too, the inclusionary factor now is including men into what has been for so long been accessible to everybody, but specifically to so many women who have seen everything from A Woman Born back in the 70s as so radical, and finally a piece of work that speaks to the soul of women. And I'm wondering what kind of reaction you have gotten both, I know this book is so new and just out, but to your other work from more and more the mainstream.
From the mainstream? I don't know. What kind of reaction do you mean? I mean, I feel as if I've been sort of strangely rewarded for doing what I do, and it's been in many ways puzzling to me. And it's made me think a lot about where these rewards come from and what do they mean. I suppose that I've known for a long time that a great many men read my work, and that, you know, there were women who, when A Woman Born was published, found it depressing, couldn't finish it, hated it. You know, I don't know that these things really, we're not talking now about institutions like religious institutions. I think a work of art goes out in the world, and I'm not sure that it ever is received only along gender lines. I think that in the late 60s and early 70s, we were fighting very hard just to reclaim the fact that there was a tradition of women writing at all. That's very hard for people to understand today. It's very hard to remember, you know, even what that was like. Not a single women's bookstore, not a single women's section in any bookstore, not a single lesbian section in any bookstore. Most of the books that we, you know, have been reading over the past 20 years, either out of print or not even published. So, and you must remember this. You must remember this.
That's why we're so happy we have you on tape.
Adrienne Rich's last collection of poetry was Tonight No Poetry Will Serve, poems 2007 to 2010. She died of advanced rheumatoid arthritis in March of 2012, close to her 83rd birthday. For the audio in this program, Wings thanks Helene Rosenbluth, the Pacifica National Archive, Women on the Line, and the University of Pennsylvania Online Writers Archive, PennSound. Readings on PennSound took place also at the State University of New York at Buffalo and San Francisco State University. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. We appreciate the support of your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.